Hello, everybody, Yay. And welcome to this episode of the Black Tower Podcast. We are a Wheel of Time podcast, and I am one of your tainted hosts. Pray for us all, or don't. Not saying you have to if you don't want to, but whatever. Keep us in your thoughts, at least. Think about us in the back of your head. But I am Andrew, your Bajan Mihail.
And I am Joshua Sorgavan Mihail, encouraging you to live your best life, no matter
and where I that is. Am- Your Amenkan Mihail, Daniel, encouraging you to live whatever life makes you happy, whether that's your best or your worst. Hashtag deal with it.
Sorry for the quick interruption, but just wanted to take a second to make sure you knew about blacktowerpod.com. It is our very own website with very handy links for you to access all of your favorite Black Tower podcast stuff. Whoa, a break-in during a break-in for a plug? Yes, Patreon. It's a fantastic place for you to support your favorite content creators. For as little as a dollar a month, you can throw some support our way and help us continue what we're doing here at the Black Tower Podcast. That dollar a month will get you into our live recordings. We will also shout you out during an episode, and you get access to record a spoiler warning for our episodes that we will use. There are some other perks, like our Sword and Dragon Challenge coins that you can only get by being a Patreon member. And there are perks as far as getting some different random merchandise from us and things like that. Go on over to our Patreon and check it out. And we thank you again. Now, what was the other plug I was doing? Do you want to post in the forums on the website? There's a button for that. Do you want to join our Discord and talk to us there? There's a button for that where you can just click and join the Discord right there. One click and done. Do you want to check out our merch? There are buttons for those. If you want to see what we've been doing recently, there's a section called Dragonsworn On Demand, a calendar for the Black Tower. We thank you so much for checking it out. And now, let's get into the episode.
Ooh, yeah. He told you.
I know, right?
So,
did I?
Including this episode, we only have 4 episodes left in season 2 of the Black Tower Podcast.
Oh, shit.
Which is pretty impressive. Like,
it really is.
Surprised we survived this long.
What are you guys going to do now? I don't know. I never really thought we'd make it this far.
Go to Disney World?
So far this year, we, in contrast, I don't know how many we wound up canceling last year as far as episodes. It was at least 2 or 3. We have only canceled 1 episode this entire previous year.
Correct. That is accurate.
You guys are a couple of beautiful bastards doing the creator's work.
No, you.
I have a $100 wine voucher. Just realized that.
Hey, let's drink some wine.
Yeah, but one of the caveats to it is like, oh, a special gift for you. And it's like, you get $100 off of any case of wine priced at $160 or more. So I have to buy a case of wine. So
yeah,
I know a really great place where you can get some really fucking delicious wine.
Well, this only works for nakedwines.com. So
naked wines suck.
It's not like some random like, whoa, oh, go to any place with wine gift card, but I have to buy a case.
Go to any place with wine.
Yeah.
Avoid the wine.
I'm a cheap bitch. Just give me fucking a Food Lion gift card.
Tonight, I have, today's taintiness is brought to you by Talisman Brewery Utter Chaos. It's a chocolate milk stout.
I couldn't decide if that said stout. I couldn't like decide if that said Vooder or Vader, and I was wrong on both counts.
Vooder? Vader?
It's delicious.
So
what are we talking about tonight?
I don't know.
Let's do it.
Some shit.
Let's talk about I'm gonna like spin the wheel here.
Oh boy. Did you hear that? He just growled at us, Daniel. Mm-hmm. Give us a little purr.
That's right.
Looking quite dashing, by the way. Well, I like the red vest with the black shirt.
Thank you.
Yes, it's very nice.
I had to go into work today, and so I was like, you know what? I've been in my pajamas for like the last, 2 years. And so I thought, you know, it's time to break out the clothing.
But we've only been on mainly telework for like a year and a half.
I know. It's awkward, isn't it?
They require...
I hope it saved my job.
They required formal post-COVID. You're going to show up here. Not only are you going to risk catching something, but you're also going to have to look way more presentable than usual. Sorry to cut in again, but we got to take a second and thank our channel sponsor, the Crystal Barista. Make sure you head over to crystalbarista.com and check out all of the amazing rocks and minerals and the tools for rock hounding if you want to do it on your own that you can find there. If you want to do subscription boxes, Crystal Barista also offers monthly subscription boxes that are delivered directly to your door and hand-packed by Crystal Barista with the assistance of our own Sorvon Mihail, Josh. Also, make sure you check out Crystal Barista's Facebook page at facebook.com/rockpick. That's pick as in pickaxe with a K at the end for all of the amazing deals that the Crystal Barista does do from time to time. It's also the same place where if you're in the local area, you can see posts and updates about coming events. Make sure you head over to crystalbarista.com and then check out the Facebook page, facebook.com/rockpick. And when you're done getting everything you could possibly desire from crystalbarista.com, make sure that you let the Crystal Barista know the Black Tower Podcast sent you. Now, back into the episode. But yeah, so this episode's topic, we are going to do a culture deep dive on a culture from the Wheel of Time. But before we do that, we're going to have to do a spoiler warning. And
Spoiler warning.
Yeah, and this time, registered nerd, pick a number between 1 and 7. Six.
Six.
I think it's this one. Oh, look at that. Yeah, it's this one. All right, here is your spoiler warning for this episode. Jesus Christ, just like super like awkwardly quiet like this episode. Let's see how the editing goes. Yay.
The Black Tower stands fully erect.
When the tower is bulging at full erectness, you must protect yourself from tainty spoilers.
Your spoiler condom must cover the immense girthiness of all 14 books of Robert Jordan's The Wheel of Time.
With an itty-bitty tip at the top for the prequel New Spring.
If your condom is too small, you will get tainty spoilages all up in your eye.
Or ears. You have been warned.
All up in your eye.
Or ears.
You have indeed been warned.
It is funny, but take heed. Spoilers are no laughing matter.
It is also important to only wear one spoiler condom at a time, as two increases the chances for rupture. Science fact. Even with lube, latex on latex doesn't like it. Anyway, we're talking about a culture. In this, we're going to do a culture deep dive. And this time, we are talking about the Othion Mier, which I probably butchered the old tongue of, but in simple common tongue, the sea folk.
All right.
As opposed to the A folk or B folk, the sea folk.
CC.
There it is. Yeah.
The sea yes folk.
Ah, see.
See. It's the sea folk.
Hey, senor.
It's a whole bunch of yes men and women.
A surprising number of women.
No, sea folk are awesome. So they're one of the more mysterious cultures in the Wheel of Time. Which isn't saying a lot, because I feel like every culture is a mysterious culture in the Wheel of Time.
To a certain extent.
They're like, it doesn't matter. Oh, who are we meeting today? We're meeting the Carrion. Oh, those guys are super weird. Who are we meeting today? The Taran Ferry. Oh, those guys are super weird. Who are we meeting today? The Saldans. Oh, those guys are super weird. Then you get the Aiel, and nobody knows what the hell they're doing. The Sharans, we have no idea about the Sharans. They're like, we're going to tattoo shit on your face if you can channel. And the Shan Chan are stupid. But the sea folk.
The sea folk are fun
They, you know what? They are strange. Actually pretty fun. I feel like with a little bit of experience, like firsthand experience, I feel like it'd be pretty easy to understand their sort of hierarchy. They have a very structured hierarchy, which is very resemblant of a almost like a military structure, or a naval, merchant marine kind of hierarchy.
It's very reminiscent of a naval.
Hey, all right.
It's almost like they're like absolutely based on the Navy.
Weird, I know, right? And given the fact that Robert Jordan had experience in the military, like he would be familiar with these rank structures and how strict they can be in certain areas and how strict they need to be in certain areas. The ladies are the captains of the ships.
Correct.
And the men's are the masters of trade.
Yep.
So I really like this particular interaction. We get into some juicier bits, some bigger juicier bits later on in the deep dive, but I like to start with this bigger, one because juicier. Bigger juicier bits. I like this interaction because you've got one side that has ultimate power of where the ship goes. The captain can say, I can go wherever the hell I want. Okay, cool, you're right. But the trade master, the guy who's like, okay, well, this is the cargo we picked up, and you know, we've got ice peppers for, you know, Tyr. Oh, you want to go to Falma? Cool. They don't like ice peppers, so congratulations, you've just kind of sunk us. Like, we don't really have any way to do this anymore. Good job. They have to work together. Like,
yes.
And they have to work together well if they want to be a successful crew. We even get a bit of this when Elaine is like, I want to ride on this ship, we got to go, it's very important. And she's like, okay, where do you need to go? And they're like, we need to go here. And she's like, oh crap, he's gonna kill me because he just got all these textiles for not there. And I'm not saying the names because I can't remember the exact names of the places.
Yes.
But she was like, yeah, he's gonna kill me, I'm gonna owe him big after this. It's like, wait a minute, you're the captain of the ship, you can do whatever you want. No, they work together.
Yes.
And the thing I love about that is, like, there's this huge recurring theme of balance in the Wheel of Time. You have cultures that work together well, they're more successful, they are able to accomplish more than if they kind of just like splinter off. You see cultures like Carrion that are like, oh, we're going to do our own thing, we like to play the game of houses, it's cool. And they're not nearly as successful as some of these other cultures.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of the first little bit that I like to chew on. Welcome back, Andrew.
I like it.
Oh, thank you. Sorry. That's an emergency sudden business I had to go and take care of.
All right. I like it.
Also known as he had to pee.
Close. Anyway,
Southern Hemisphere. Anyway, what about you, Daniel? What do
it's
you
all
think?
In the South. What are you talking about?
It's true. It is all in the South. So I really like the Athamir. One of the reasons that I think that they are, as you said, sort of mysterious, but like the very much good kind of mysterious. The mysterious where you want to know more.
Yeah.
But he never gives it to you because it doesn't matter. Like, you know everything that you need to know about the Athamir for the story. Is the whole, like, where did they come from? Where did they go? Where did they come from? Cotton Eye Joe.
Don't you dare, you son of a bitch.
Which is like, again, they're very much, again, seafaring people. And so for the vast majority of your life, if you are an Athamir, whether male or female or this or that or the other thing, you are on a boat.
That's your Amayar.
Yes. There is a small-ish, because again, we don't know how many there actually are.
Unless you're
are, so we
on
don't
a
know
yard.
How much of a percentage of it is. But again, if you are one of those weird Athamir who decide to stay on land,
Well, they don't even get like the title. Like, I don't even think they're considered technically, or at least within the Othanamir, they're not even considered technically part of the Othanamir, but they live on their islands.
But they aren't.
No, yeah. They're like they're non-naturalized citizens.
Basically,
like they have work visas. Like, as long as they like keep making the dope ass porcelain, they're good to go.
Yep, basically.
Are the ones that all killed themselves in the end, right? That was one of the last. Don't we already gave a spoiler for the whole series.
No. It's not about spoilers. It's don't make me sad.
Yes, because like, whenever the female Choden Call was activated or melted during the cleansing of Sidene, they interpret this as the end of the time of illusion and committed mass suicide.
Yep, unfortunately.
So the entire group died, but it was their choice.
They were not Othanamir. They were under the protection and like the Othanamir had taken them under their wing and said, look, we will take care of you because of their own cultural beliefs, which prevented them from doing a lot of,
interesting. Cause like there's
kind of, actually a really good comparison.
Well, there's actually a dialogue. Like when they die, Samila Din Salon Long Eyes actually witnessed everything happening. And came back and told Zadia Din Parde Blackwing, who is the mistress of ships, basically like their their version of a queen, basically.
Yes. Commodore.
And like whenever Samil was telling the story, like her voice was breaking, like she was crying, like it seemed like they actually did consider them like more. So it's like it's weird, like they're not Othanamir, but they're as close as you can get to being sea folk without being sea folk.
It's also, again, it's a real question of legal versus non-legal. Because in so many ways, I can be best friends with somebody who's not technically an American citizen and consider them a very good person and basically an American and my best friend and or the love of my life or whatever. But it's a legal distinction versus a personal distinction. So she's sitting there being like, some of these are my best fucking friends. And even though they're not Othanamir, they're still good people. They're still good friends. They've been part of our lives for so many years and blah, blah, blah. And so when an entire group of people just offs themselves in general, that is incredibly affecting. And especially when you've actually known these people and have relationships with them, now it's just that much more.
Yeah. Like I kind of want to read out their thing. So for anybody that this is a tough topic for the next like minute.
Oh yeah.
Trigger warning, you know, for that kind of things. If it's difficult for you, you might want to tune out for the next minute to 2 minutes. If you're watching us, like we'll give a thumbs up when we're done doing that. Cause it's one of the more like gut wrenching scenes for me. But anyway, starting now, like skip forward or, you know, mute or whatever you have to do. So this is Samil talking to Zaida. The Amayar were all dead or dying. Men, women, her voice broke, children. Everywhere I've been, it was the same. They gave their children a poison that put them into a deep sleep from which they did not awaken. It seems there was not enough of that to go around. So many of the adults took slower poisons. Some lived long enough to be found and tell the tale. Have none been saved, Zadia asked. None at all. Tears glistened on her cheeks, too. But Harane could not fault her on that. Her own cheeks were wet. None, shipmistress. That's fucking heavy.
It is.
All the tears.
I mean, so it was mentioned in our live chat that they follow the way of watch.
So here's the thumbs up that we're done reading the explicative stuff.
So it was almost in the what was proposed in chat here is that it's a different version or evolved version of the way of the leaf, right? So
this pacifist.
Yeah.
And it centralizes on the idea that reality isn't actually real, but a passageway to another existence.
Right. And so
it really is in some ways like not, again, as stated, not the way of the leaf, but it's very Aiel similar in terms of the the waking from the dream, and also some pacifism and whatnot. It's almost like you can imagine that some Aiel splintered off from the waste and went to the water.
Yeah.
And then, of course, it just turned into this new evolution of people and of whatever, which is, again, kind of crazy given the whole Aiel, like, no water thing.
Yeah.
I mean, well, they are the Aiel.
Yeah.
I mean, well, exactly. That's sort of where it comes from.
Lamayar, they're also, like, they're the indigenous people of Tremolking. Like,
correct.
They are the natives of that island. So
yeah, no, it, so, you know, when this whole thing happens, you know, the sea folk are deeply affected by it. They're not happy about it at all. And, you know, why would they be? But anyway, we were discussing
my cabbages.
Fuck you. Also very nice. Yeah,
I forgot where we were before we went on that tangent.
We weren't. I don't think we were really.
It was like in generic talking about it
specifically.
Well, let's talk about the prophecies then. We've talked about them being kind of like mysterious, and they stay pretty mysterious because in the entirety of the series, to my recollection, we only see, so the sea folk or the Othaon Mier prophecies are called the Jendai prophecies, J-E-N-D-A-I. Mm-hmm. We see two portions of it. The White Tower shall be broken by his name, and Aes Sedai shall kneel to wash his feet and dry them with their hair. And then we read the Stone of Tyr.
Such a biblical reference.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Mary Magdalene.
To me, like the most biblical reference in the entire thing.
Oh yeah.
Even though, again, there are a lot. Should be. It is a savior story in so many ways.
That
so
might be the most.
Should be a lot of similarities, but like that one is like
might be the most blatant. Like,
exactly. Yeah. That's what I'm saying.
Like, I'm not saying he's Jesus,
but at the same time,
you might could call him Jesus Light.
Yes. Yeah. I'm not going to call him Jesus Light. But he does say, as they're crucifying him, "Forgive them, Father, they know not what they do."
It's not quite Jesus, but he does say, "Forgive them, Father, they don't realize I'm the dragon reborn."
Yeah. Right? Exactly.
The second prophecy.
They don't know.
The second prophecy we actually get to see, like, the kind of wording of is, "The Stone of Tyr has fallen and war breaks over the nations of the land. Those that once ruled returned and have been driven back for the first time." So, and obviously we see throughout this, through like reading the series pretty early on, in the Dragon Reborn, we see Rand and team, or did they take it in the end of the Great Hunt? The end of the Great Hunt? Yeah, it was the end of the Great Hunt that they took the Stone of Tyr, right?
Or, no, it's at the very end of the Dragon Reborn.
Yeah, it's Dragon Reborn.
Yeah, it's Dragon Reborn.
I keep getting confused. Like, I keep thinking like it's after the fight in the sky above Falma that Rand is like, "I am the Dragon Reborn," and then we get the Dragon
Reborn. Which is
Reborn
the Great
Hunt. Correct, yep.
Why am I mixing Falma and the Stone of Tyr? Andrew, why
are you like this?
Why are you the way you are? Anyway, so it is after Rand takes the Stone of Tyr by, you know, pulling Kalendor out. That we do see like an increase in war and instability, because like by then enough people have seen and heard the stories of the fight in the clouds, you know, the cowboy screaming in the clouds, and you know, then the
I'm so excited for those memes.
Oh yeah. Basically, like we see it happen. I mean, and we see a lot of like overlaps with the Corytheon cycle or the prophecy of the dragon, that kind of stuff, but we also see like the most the like least used name for the Dragon Reborn, the Koramor.
Yes.
Mm.
So.
No, the Jendai prophecy, like, so again, the prophecies bring up this whole idea of prophecy. I'm not normally one who likes prophecies and stories, right? To me, it's just kind of like boring. Oh, yes, someone will come and do this. And I'm like, okay, how did you know that? And there never seems to be any very convincing, like, divination methods. It's always just, there's a prophecy. Now, in the Wheel of Time, we have a beautiful divination method, the foretelling. Now,
not to be mixed up with the five telling, which will give you COVID.
Or the telling of the foursome.
Yeah, I want you guys to go out and burn all of the five telling towers.
Yes. Do it.
There are telling towers?
Mm-hmm.
So, wait a minute, though. If foretelling is how we get these prophecies, how do the sea folk have prophecies?
See, I don't think foretelling is the only way.
Well, it's also possible
that
you just don't see the Athan Mir that have the foretelling.
Well, yeah, but I mean, there's also dreaming, right? And then I think there's also a fair, like, measure of, like, just bullshittery. And I think there's also a fair share of what does the Corinthian cycle say?
Write that shit down. It's good.
Well, my point was the only like good method of divination. Oh my goodness.
I think Josh is being facetious. I am fucking dumb and I can't read facetious. Holy shit. Facetious. Facetious. I don't know. The Athan Mi'er have, like, according to their prophecy, or with their prophecy, have the most, like, positive outlook of what the Dragon Reborn is. Like, they're like,
they absolutely,
oh, it's not the one you wait for in Dread. It's the one that we seek. We'll herald a new age. I don't know why I made them, like, pseudo-Irish, but
what I was trying to say was that the foretelling was the most, like, substantial of divination methods that we actually see in the book.
Correct.
Are there other methods of divination that they utilize? Sure, why not? Cool. But foretelling,
let me read the omens with my bones.
That makes the most sense.
Oh man, got this boner here. Let me read the omens.
I woke up with an erection and it pointed at a raven on the mantle.
No, whoa, those are Shang-Chen.
She's pregnant.
Omens. But
I saw a raven out at sea. I'm sure that means something.
Sorry, it went from I woke up with a boner and it was pointing at the raven on the mantle to woke up with a boner and it was pointing at
woke
the raven
up with a boner. Where I was going to go with this is that the Shang-Chen had a really can see the future handling the whole women who can channel.
Who knew they that the one-eyed monster could see the future?
Successfully from the White Tower for like a thousand years.
Oh, the Windfinders.
Yeah.
Yeah, such a misleading name.
We got there.
Because they didn't find wind as much as they created wind.
Well, but the wise ones in Emmons Field would listen to the winds.
Not the wise ones, the wisdoms.
Wisdoms.
Yes.
Wisdoms ones are in the waste.
I was testing you. Good job.
Did you say they're in the ways or the waste?
The waste.
Okay, I heard ways for some reason. I'm like, we're
the
not
the wise ones in the ways.
Yes, the wise ones.
We have our ways, and it's just like a couple like other way gays that they keep secluded off to themselves.
Live chat's killing me right now.
Oh my god, registered bird. That is the best pickup line I have ever heard. But it's so specific. The other person needs to have read these books.
That'll work at JordanCon.
Andrew, it'll work in like 10 years when the series is done.
Andrew, I think you should deliver the line live for everybody. Like,
yeah.
give us your best pickup.
Do it.
Excuse me. Do you have the foretelling? Because I can see my boner in your future.
Hey! And if you don't get some action on that, she wasn't the one anyway.
Truth.
That's that. What now, you should do now from now on.
The true truth.
Like from now on, if you ever suspect like infidelity, you just gotta burst in the room holding like the skin of a human, and just be like, "Who the fuck is Avienda?" You assert dominance. You instill confusion and disorder. You own the battle space at that point.
That's true.
That's
true.
And then once you're done with it,
you go to jail for murder.
You can be like, then so, you can go ahead and say, "Hey." And also, it puts the lotion on its skin, or it gets the hose again, and then it's a whole new series.
So we've got numerous different ways in which people deal with women who can channel. The Aiel, they have them become wise ones. The Seanchan, they have them become Suldam or Damani.
Oh, are you sure he's the best guy for you? Because I'm pretty sure I could give you Koromor.
Wow.
Just cringy enough.
You know how you know how Malkier talks.
Shut up.
The damn jokes.
We should really do.
We need a gong. Where's a gong do show? A
series of pickup lines.
Like terrible pickup lines, which would be like just any word, that I've ever used.
I know I've seen some. I know it's a thing. I think Lewd Theron on Twitter did a couple of other ones, but like, I think we should make it an official segment. I think we should make it an official, like, no, seriously, these are the Watt pickup.
Terrible Watt pickup lines.
Watt pickup lines. Well,
they don't need to be terrible. They will be, inevitably. Most of them will be.
I think it's more fun if, like, they're really bad pickup lines.
No, exactly. That's what I'm saying. Inevitably, most of them will be. But they don't all need to be. It won't be a requirement. It'll just be a side effect of most of them. Is that a Red Rod Tarangreal in your pocket, or are you just happy to see?
This isn't quite working out. We're not staying afloat. I've just got to bare my chest and tell you we should see other folk.
Wow.
No.
Are you a sexy lamp, or do you want to come sit up?
Fuck off.
Are you a festival champion? Because you know how to handle this court stuff. Okay.
I love top it. 10 right, Will of Time pickup lines to keep everything like the Sara dry
was good.
And screw barren.
Are you dancing the Sara or are you having a seizure? I can't tell. All right, so hierarchy in the Athaan Mir. I think it's cool.
This episode is so disconnected.
The mistress of ships, who is, as you said, basically their version of the queen. And she basically gets to tell all of the other captains of the other ships.
The sail mistress.
A general idea of what they're doing. I'm guessing that she actually has a lot of ability to give sort of like regionally.
Mm-hmm.
Ship's orders in terms of please don't like go into other people's territories or do whatever, like this is the plan that we have for the vast majority of our ships, though it does seem like she unless she's on the ship itself doesn't necessarily tell captains like go here to this town, like do this to here. It's more of a general idea of like avoid these regions, go to these places, you know, this is your jurisdiction kind of thing. But if she is on a ship, she is the big bad bitch of that ship. She gets to tell it exactly where to go. Though, again, to Josh's point earlier, the gentleman, the highest ranking gentleman on the ships,
the cargo master and the captain is the sail mistress,
correct? And they absolutely have to work together. If they do not work together, the ship will not really function. And so absolutely we get a glimpse of what that looks like in the books. We've already talked about the greatest example of, hey, we're going to Falma now. Wait, but I just picked up a bunch of things that Falma doesn't like. Well, I'm sorry, lover. I will make it up to you later, but we're going to Falma because these ladies really need to get to Falma.
Yeah.
But yeah, it does seem to be a really kind of like an incredibly naval hierarchy, which is cool, but at the same time, the sort of turning it on its head thing is the idea that in the Wheel of Time, which there is no reason that America or the rest of the nations of the world can't do this, it just has not typically been the case. All of the most high-ranking officials on all of the boats are female. The mistress of ships, the sail mistress, and the wind finder are all female. Now, one of those has to be because dudes can't channel because it turns out badly for most of the story. But but two of those could technically be male if they wanted to, and they don't. In the Athan Mir, they are female. Which, again, I've always just thought was cool of, like, again, a nice... This one doesn't even have a restriction on it. It's just a thing that they do kind of piece of the story. Because Aes Sedai being women is kind of a necessary thing until later. Yeah. But, you know, all of the sail mistresses and the mistress of ships and the everything being female is not a requirement.
Yes.
Yeah, it happens anyway.
And the aspect of this hierarchy that I really, really love is there are no limitations on what ranks you can achieve, right?
Mm-hmm.
You can't, nobody's going to come up to you and say, you'll never be sail mistress because you can't be sail mistress because you weren't born to the right mommy and daddy. Like, mm-hmm. that's not how this works. How seemingly, it works yes. is, yeah, seemingly, from what we understand, what it yes. means is that they don't really have nobility. What they have is a society and a culture who values your skill, your hard work, your, you know, your patience, tenacity, intelligence, like all these skills that you will cultivate through years and years and years of serving on a ship. And you know that's what one of the things they talk about is that the sail mistress, she was there when she was younger, she was scrubbing decks like everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
She understands the different roles, responsibilities, and difficulties with those roles in each position on that ship.
Yes,
she knows the ship in and out. She knows what's required to run the ship because she's done each of those positions personally. And so that,
yep.
that's something you don't see a lot of in a lot of these stories. And
yes. well, I think and it's super to cool... be fair, something that you don't see that often in real life either.
Accurate.
And I actually really appreciate that because, again, I don't want to get political or anything. That's not what I'm trying to say. But the companies that I have seen
mm-hmm.
that work the best... that I've worked for are the ones where the person at the top actually knows what everyone under them do.
Oh yeah.
And account for that. You yep. end up again, I'm not saying
that's very military.
Target isn't that is very military.
Guys, if you're an E5, you not only need to know what E4 through 1 below you does in their job, but you need to know what the E6 and some of what the E7 above you does.
Well, and of course, again, in not all cases, certainly. I mean, you hear stories of people just sort of skipping things. But for the most part, in the military, that's a great example of an organization that mostly requires you to do what an E1 does for a certain amount of time, and then what an E2 does for a certain amount of time, and then what an E3 does for a certain amount of time. And again, I'm not saying that there aren't people who forget. They're absolutely just shitty officers who are just like, you know, all right, well, I did, you know, this rank for 2 months and fuck them. But at the same time, it's not out of ignorant.
If you were a rank for only 2 months, fuck them is exactly how you made it out of that rank. Sorry, either up or down.
I will admit that was my own.
No, you're good. Like, it just paved the way for a really good joke, I think.
Right. No, it's true.
One of the things that you'll.
But it's not out of ignorance, it's out of deliberateness.
Sure.
Whereas in corporate America, and again, I, not to get political, not to say that this is good or bad necessarily, it's not. There are a lot of CEOs of companies that move laterally between companies.
Yes.
And so they've actually been a CEO for the last 25 years at 5 different companies. And when they pop into the CEO of Apple, sure, I'm not saying that they didn't work their way up in their first company. They might not have, but they very well may have. But they don't actually know when they pop into the CEO, being the CEO of Apple, what the person on the ground floor at one of their actual stores does, because they've never done it. I'm not saying that you can't get some idea of it by looking at their responsibilities. I'm not saying that you can't do whatever, but more often than not, they don't know what that person actually does on a day-to-day basis because they've never done it themselves. Right. And that often leads to just disparities in decision-making.
Yes.
Of this is what we should be doing for the betterment of the company without really having a great understanding of what the person on that floor does and making their job more difficult because what you're saying sounds right, but if you actually do the job, it doesn't make sense. In the Athanmier, it seems like from the information that we get, there is less of that because everybody has worked their way up from the lowliest deck swabber to the captain of the boat, the captain of the ship, the captain of the ships in general.
Yes. Well, and
if you think the CEOs are bad, don't even go and look at the boards.
Yeah. Mm. There's a stigma.
I wasn't even going to get into the board. Yeah. Fuck the board.
There's a stigma in the military too, and for right, you know, for better or for worse, the stigma exists. It's not always deserved, but there's a stigma in the military that if you are, as an officer, if you are prior military, if you're prior enlisted and you've gone from enlisted to officer, the stigma is that you're going to be a more effective officer than a guy who went to college and came directly into the military with
a guy that played military for 4 fucking years and came in trying to tell everybody what to do.
Exactly.
I'm out, so now, I can say it now. Like,
again, that reputation is not always well earned.
Sure.
But it exists for a reason.
It's not always accurate. People,
yeah.
Because we got a second LT that was prior service in our unit. And he was, I would have sworn, like on a stack of Bibles, that he either came from an academy or ROTC commission. Because he would implement the dumbest shit I've ever heard of in my life. Uh-huh. Just trying to make things terrible. So that's a good example of it not always being true. And you do have people that come from like academy commissions and ROTC commissions that are effective. And normally those people listen more to the supporting enlisted structure they have. And that's the whole reason like people are like surround themselves with people to give opinions. And that's one of the great things about the Athanmier is because the sail mistress and the cargo master are on equal footing. They're just in charge of different sections, but they work with each other. Cause I think if I'm not mistaken, they're often a married couple.
Often, yes.
I don't know if it would be often. We actually see 2 examples of it being true on the 3 boats that we go to. Mm, so the majority of what we see in the books is yes. But well, I don't know if that is uncommon, indicative probably. Of. Yeah. No, exactly. That's true. That is one of the things that it's telling you is that it is not uncommon. I don't know whether it's actually the exception or the rule. But it's definitely on page. We see more of that being true.
It's the acceptable.
Than it not being true.
It's both.
It is definitely acceptable.
It is the acceptable. It is the exception and the rule.
No, but it's really nice, which I would say that there are two exceptions to this rank structure, though.
Okay.
One is going to be Windfinder, because as soon as they find out that you can channel, you're a Windfinder. I don't think that you can move other places from there. I don't think you're stuck as a Windfinder. I think you can do other things as well. But you're kind of removed from the basic ship structure, rank structure, and you're saying, okay, you are in this rank structure now. And you are trained to the job that suits the skill that is unique to you in this case.
Yes.
I mean, you have to show skill in using air.
Absolutely. Water. Absolutely. You do still have to like earn your keep. And yeah. If you fail out,
you like if you don't have any skill in it, like I don't know. We don't get to see necessarily examples of anybody who just like can't really channel that much and they're mildly effective. Like you could assume that they might would be a lower ranked Windfinder.
Yes. Sure.
But we also never see any Windfinders that aren't channelers. So it seems like a prerequisite to be a Windfinder is channeler.
Yes. Well, and that's what I was going to say is it's another wonderful sort of like coexist thing, because of course a sail mistress can overrule a Windfinder, because in the end the sail mistress is the head of the ship. She can overrule a Windfinder, and she can also overrule a cargo master, because she is the end all be all. But
as far as the movement of the ship,
yes,
she cannot outrank the cargo master in terms of their trade. She can dictate everything about the ship and where it goes, but she can't, like, if the cargo master knows that, like, she's like, hey, we're going from here to Falma, then the cargo master says, cool, then we're gonna take ice peppers. She can't say, no, we're not.
Yes,
well,
so, I like, they know have
that's actually true.
It is,
we don't get a. We don't get an example.
I mean, it's a fair. I would say that it's a fair assumption, because a sail mistress has full authority over the ship, like where it goes, what it does. So there, it would stand a reason that the cargo master would have full authority over the trade that the ship conducts.
Well, and not where it conducts trade, but what it conducts.
Yes,
is that the Windfinder also seems to be on relatively equal footing with the cargo master and the sail mistress. However, if a Windfinder goes, those women can channel, we shouldn't let them on our ship, the sail mistress can go, look, I know that you don't like this, and we're not going to be doing something you're comfortable with, but we're taking these passengers. You're going to have to hang out below decks. Kind of thing. But again, it is that very symbiotic relationship. It is very much that like equal footing, equal, you know, listen to the people around you, where the sail mistress is going to go, hey, Windfinder, can these ladies channel? And when the Windfinder goes, yeah, they can channel, she'll be like, nah, get off our boat. Like, because again, everybody has to work together, and there is such a seemingly cultural relationship and symbiosis that happens on these ships, where everyone listens to everybody else, even though someone still needs to have the final authority on certain issues. There is this like, okay, well, we have a triarchy in some ways, because the Windfinder is the person who's actually going to get us there. The cargo master is the person who's actually going to make us money when we get there. And the sail mistress is going to tell both of them where we're fucking going. So like,
yeah, they all three different really have a have different,
to have,
yeah. they have a different area of responsibility when it and comes
expertise.
To cargo and trade and defense. It's the cargo master.
I mean, it's almost like, Josh, I'm sure you remember, like, this is another military thing. Position-based authority versus rank-based authority.
Yes.
You may be an E6, but if E4 is in charge of the area and they're the lead for the area, what the E4 says goes. This is a little different where the positional authority is the rank authority. Like, you're not going to have the position of sail mistress or cargo master or windfinder without being the ranking person of it. Like, your positional authority is your ranking authority as well.
A beautiful yes. example of this is that in the Air Force, pilots are officers. Officers okay. always outrank enlisted.
Sure.
Crew chiefs are enlisted.
Does so no second OT outranks me. No, I refuse.
If an officer comes out to a plane and, you know, and they're like, all right, we're gonna go flying today. If the crew chief says, no, you're not, that officer ain't flying. It doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. If the crew chief does not sign off on it and say that, you know, yes, you can take my plane out, that officer ain't going nowhere, and it won't matter. Like, what they can do is get another crew chief on that plane.
No way.
So in this
pilot sitting there getting ready to fly, crew chief sitting there, I got you for 3 whole minutes. 3 whole minutes of play time.
Well, and of course, again, so many of these come from a very intelligent place. Like, for example, I, as an intelligent human being and also as a person who has done a certain amount of research, the intention for that ranking in the Air Force right there, the one that you literally just brought up, is the crew chief is in charge of making sure that all of the tools are up to snuff. And they can outrank somebody who says that they are going to take the plane out, because if they say no, it's because of a technical reason.
Yes.
They're not just going to tell an officer, hey, go fuck yourself. I outrank you.
Sure.
Though it happens, as I said, the intention behind
they never outright say fuck you, you're not flying. It's more like, well, there's a problem with this part, and that part's actually fine.
No. That's what I'm saying.
But you pulled a 9.5 G maneuver and a 9.2 G aircraft, and they have to do extra work. So they're fucking pissed.
No, as I said, that's why in the intention of it, the crew chief will not tell an officer that they can't fly in a plane that is ready to fly. They will only tell an officer not to fly in a plane that they will hurt themselves in.
Or, now again, or if they suspect that the officer is not going to respect the limitations and instructions of that aircraft. That happens sure. as well.
I feel like there's a Princess and the Frog like meme to be made there, where it's just like, how bad do you want to fly? Why don't you take a poor sinner's hand?
Well, and of course, I think that is, again, we all know that what we see on the page isn't all that there is. There are absolutely Athan Mir vessels where somebody is a new sail mistress and they want to assert dominance and they just fuck their cargo master or their windfinder because they can.
And not
the not because it's the smart thing to do, not because they needed to do that, just because they can. And there are cargo masters and windfinders who do it too. Now, granted, that ship team doesn't last for long, I'm guessing. Or at least that dynamic doesn't.
But, if I was a betting boy.
But it's always the intention behind it. Right. There has to be someone who breaks ties. You can't have two people butting heads who have exactly the same authority, because nothing ever gets done. You have to have at least a third party or somebody you can break ties. And that's why in the end, there is a role that is the most master of the ship.
Yes.
Now, again, if you don't work with the other two people, you ain't gonna be master of that ship very long.
Well, and that's the beauty of this type of situation. there's no reason for the mistress, the cargo master to fuck everybody else. There's no reason.
Yeah.
It hurts him as much as it hurts everybody else.
Yeah. I forgot about a section of the sail mistress. She is also often regarded as the head of the crew's families, whether or not there's actually any kinship.
Oh, correct.
Yes.
Nice. That's right.
So, but yes, when it comes to matriarch. Yeah, when it comes to the ship, as far as where it goes, how it's sailing, all that kind of stuff, sail mistress, full authority. When it comes to trade, like what they're trading, how much they're charging for it, that kind of stuff, as well as the defense of the ship, cargo master, full authority. When it comes to making the weaves to make sure the ship gets there, and so technically it can be how fast the ship gets there, Windfinder.
Well, and of course, again, it seems like on page we have a situation where the sail mistress very much defers in some ways to the Windfinder as far as what passengers to take to a certain extent when it comes to channelers, especially. Though I don't know whether that's often just a thing that she does in general, or whether that this team, if you will, does in general. But it, again, it's a, it seems to be a pattern that on Athanir ships, they don't take channelers because the Windfinders see channelers and go, nope. And the sail mistresses and all go, all right, cool. You're the one who gets to say that.
That is a power. That is a power of the Windfinder. The Windfinder has the right to refuse passage to a passenger who can channel, which is something usually reserved to the sail mistress.
Well, and the, the interesting thing here is the very intelligent way in which the Athanmier worked out to avoid the suspicion of the White Tower. To avoid Aes Sedai coming to them looking for women who can channel, they did a number of things. One, they would allow channelers to come on their ships, but only if the Windfinder was like, okay, cool, yeah, I'll hang out below decks. We will hide from them. I will not channel. And this is, you know, we're going to make sure. But the other thing that they would do that I thought was quite creative was every once in a while, they would take a woman who could channel, probably, I don't think we ever get confirmation on this, but probably a Windfinder who like failed out of the program.
Definitely their weakest and less skilled.
Well, but I think there's even mention of dropping, like trying not to give them just weak channelers because they didn't want to attract suspicion. So they, but it would, you know, I mean, your ability to channel, the amount that you can channel doesn't equate into the strength of character you have.
Correct.
You could have someone who's totally a really incredible channeler who can't hang with the Athanmier.
Right.
But every once in a while,
personality matters as much as, if not more than, your ability to
channel. I mean, you're not, there's credence to the idea that it's not always their weakest or least skilled, because there are three Athanmier Aes Sedai.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So
I really think that it also depends on their mental abilities, their physical, their ability to mesh well with the crew of a ship.
Somewhere. Well, and not only that, not to
cut you off. Shit, I didn't realize Gitara was Athanmier. I did not realize that.
But also think about it.
If only I read the book.
How many cultures have like sort of sacrifices where it's almost honorable in some ways, where even if you are strong with the power, they say, hey, Gitara.
Gotta take one for the team. We
as the Athanmier think it's actually incredibly important for us to fly under the radar. Will you go to the White Tower to give them what they want so that they don't come to us looking for women who can channel? And Katara goes, hell yeah. Even though she would have made a great Windfinder, or even though she would have been very high ranked or whatever, it's still a honored position because what you're doing is necessary to keep up the ruse, to keep up the culture, to keep up the understanding that you have with the Aes Sedai and the White Tower.
So here's a question, though.
Hold on a fucking second. You mean to tell me that all three of the sea folk Aes Sedai, not only are they all brown sisters, but they are also all librarians for the 13th Depository. And the, people the think it's the 13th Suppository. And people think this might be coincidental. Shenanigans.
No, shenanigans. It is not coincidental.
Hey, what's the name of that restaurant that you really like with all the memorabilia on the walls?
Hooters.
The goofy shit on the walls with the mozzarella sticks?
Hooters or Twin Peaks, one of the two.
So let me ask this, and this is a little bit of a gee whiz, a little bit of a theory, right? Okay. So we know.
Oh, gee, jizz. I mean, whiz.
So Guitara is famous for what?
Your mom.
My mom. I hope not.
A number of things.
Well, she's most famous for her.
She's dreaming.
Huh?
Isn't that?
No, Guitara is. No. She's the one who gave the prophecy that Rand had been born.
Sorry, I apologize. Yeah.
So she's the one who screamed. He lives. The dragon draws his first breaths on the
slopes of Dragon Mount. In the cold, in the snow, through the sleet, through the hail, through the rain.
He takes his first breath as she takes her last,
and she falls over dead. Well,
the dragon reborn takes his first breath on the slopes of dragon. What are these words that I'm reading?
What are these words? So let me ask this. Culturally, is there a predisposition for Windfinder Aes Sedai or Windfinders to have the foretelling? As we know that Aiel Wise Ones have a bit of an affinity to being dreamers.
No, I would say that there isn't enough evidence to say yay or nay,
but it's a fun thought.
But it's a fun theory. I'm with you on the why not of it, but also again, I would say that in the books there's definitely not enough evidence to say yay. Though there also is very much not enough evidence to say, nah.
Well, I'm going to beat that guy. Even if I'm not that guy, I'm going to beat that guy and say no.
It's a beauty. Because, it's the beauty of a good conspiracy theory. There's just enough to say yes.
Well, the thing is, like, when you say dreamer, what are you referring to? Are you referring to Egwene, like her dreamer? Or the ability of the wise ones to speak to others in dreams?
I'm saying the Aiel wise
the
ones.
The dream walk.
Yeah. They have half a dozen people dreamers that can do it.
Okay, so not dreamers, the ability to dream walk. Well, that's something like, yes, the wise ones have a predisposition to it because, well, they all know what Teleron Riad is.
Yeah.
They're not afraid to go in Teleron Riad, and they train to go in Teleron Riad. And they know their ability to hit a space in between Teleron Riad and the others to find the dream. So it's something that like they trained to do. Where the Aes Sedai don't.
Yes. And I will say that again, Josh has a point, but also it's a question of ignorance. Because how many of the Aes Sedai would actually be able to do it if they were as knowledgeable as the wise ones? Though again, it does also seem to be somewhat of a predisposition, given that there are so many wise ones who just can. Versus so many Aes Sedai who seem, granted, perhaps uninterested in, though also possibly incapable of, because they use other ways into Teleron Riad. It's not that they can't get in there, it's just that they have to use Teron Riad.
It would be a good, it would be a good theory episode, probably.
I feel like a miss was very much on the scope of anybody could be taught to do this.
That's what she seems to imply, and that's why
I don't think, because like we know from the way the Wheel of Time works that everything isn't like there's no real like racial basis, like the divisions are cultural, not racial, and cultural doesn't generically carry with it a genetic component, so I don't see why there would be a No, it doesn't. By definition, culture itself does not carry genetics. Now, there are times where culture and genetic identities overlap, but
I'm not disagreeing with that, but we also know that as humans, if you have kids with dreamwalkers,
mm-hmm.
you're more likely to have more dreamwalkers versus if you have kids with people who either can't or don't know that they can dreamwalk.
Well,
you are less likely to have dreamwalkers. But again, I agree with your point that we don't have enough evidence because there aren't Aes Sedai who go through the rigors of wise
women. Well, to lend credence to you, it is considered a talent. So,
well, and that's what I was just going to say. This goes back to our episode of what is a talent? Is it a capital T or a lowercase t? Now, if it's a lowercase T.
Well, and dreamer is definitely capital T.
Yeah, that's definitely capital T. Dream I don't know.
Walker, I don't know whether it would be counted as a capital T.
You have a culture, an Aiel culture of people who understand what that lowercase T is and are able to train that and pass that on to people. Well, maybe the sea folk have the capital T of foretelling.
Well, one of the things that I was going to say, something
along those lines.
Also, to bring it back to the sea folk, it is interesting that they do say on page that the massive amount of Sidar,
yes,
that the Windfinders are able to channel is like mind-blowing in some ways to Elaine and Nynaeve. Because even women who are like a 3 on the channel scale or whatever can still channel like giant cords of air and spirit and whatnot.
And water.
Yeah. And they're just like, holy fuck. Or sorry, air and water. And they're like, holy fuck, this is incredible. But again, it really does come down in some ways to how much of talents are upbringing, lowercase t talents.
Well,
lowercase t.
We even getting how much of that
is just learned, and if you focus on channeling this much of a couple of elements, that when it comes right down to it, we are also given the information that historically women are better at channeling. How much of that is flexing the muscle over and over and over and over and over and over and over again and getting better at doing it? And how much of it is a natural predisposition? And I definitely am one of the people who say, I said I could probably do it if they started the same way as Athanir, but they do a lot more sort of going wide versus specification.
Well, we also get the example of this with Elaine exchanging training with the Windfinder,
mm-hmm.
and Elaine commenting and saying, wow, I can channel wind and water so much better because I've trained with you. And the Windfinder going, and it was a good bargain because I can now weave fire that much better.
Yes.
So I'll be able to defend our ship. And it turned out to be a really good deal for both of them.
Which, oh my god, can you imagine if Egwene had actually trained with an Athanmir? Because after her stint with the Seanchan, she was already fucking tossing around fucking weaves that she had no business being able to actually do based on Aes Sedai training.
Oh yeah.
And then if she had gone ahead and trained with the Athanmir, fucking hell, like,
I mean, it's just like, you know, you have the Windfinders that are almost exclusively make the ship go.
Yeah.
So they train mostly in air and water, and then they use the training and their strength or their focus and speciality in air and water to help defend the ship.
Yes.
To the Aes Sedai, who are more of a wide breadth of knowledge that mainly avoids combat style weaving.
Yes.
At least before the reunification.
Correct.
Versus the Seanchan Damani, who are almost exclusively combat weaves.
Yes.
So it makes sense. Not that anybody said it didn't, but It's like you can understand why, and
absolutely.
Egwene already like got super powerful without spending time with the Windfinders. Which has been like a little ridiculous. I mean, she might have survived if she had trained with the Windfinders, but
I love it.
Well, I love it. One of the things that I love, I went ahead and threw a meme in the discussion, but I love the idea of fourth age Aes Sedai, or whatever you want to call
it. Oh, yeah.
Can come from any, you know, whatever. But the, oh, yeah, so I got my associates on the deck of the, you know, the whatever. And then I got my bachelor's in the Aiel Waste. And then I got, you know, my master's in the White Tower. And then I went to the Black Tower and found, I know it makes a different joke, but I went to the Black Tower and found a warder. Like, I love the idea of once things actually settle down and once channelers in general, whether they be male or female, really seem to start understanding each other and realizing that they're better together and realizing that everyone has a focus and a thing that they're good at and a part to play and a knowledge base. Just how strong anyone who actually decides to do more than just the one specific thing can become. Like, I can even imagine, like, so there's this I'll wrap it up in a minute, but there's this episode that I watched with an ex-girlfriend of Grey's Anatomy where all of the like residents were so desperate to go ahead and get experience that they were doing surgeries on each other to get surgery experience. So that they could pass tests. And
sounds like a good way to no longer be a resident.
I agree. It was a horrible episode, but it was also interesting to think about the fact that that is actually a mentality to have.
Yeah.
And so the sad part and the cool part and the interesting part and all of that. Yeah, of course, that's not a thing registered. I get you. It was television. They were being fucking ridiculous. But
TV's also, not real?
Yeah. But can you imagine Aes Sedai or Athon Mir or whatever eye-doming each other just for the experience?
Just to learn to do
the thing. Like, again, it's something that is abhorrent, yet also, like, weirdly, like,
they would have found a lot of hidden kinks they didn't know about.
Right?
Holy shit. I do have a pain fetish. Holy fuck. Who would have thought?
And she gets stupid strong through her experience with the Aedom. Now, again, I'm not wishing that on any Aes Sedai. I know it's horrible, and I get that. But, like, you know that there are some Aes Sedai who are like, what's the best way that I can grow with the power? Oh, it involves an Aedom? Hey, best friends.
Yeah.
I mean,
here.
They can get like, the same result without an Aedom.
Possibly.
Maybe.
I mean, like, technically it's possible. You just have to be able to ask, like, to gain the same level of commitment as you would get from the fear commitment of, I know, like, pain, no make hurt.
Sure.
Accurate. Yes.
Yes.
Everybody loves merchandise, and one of the best possible places to go and get yourself some really dope Wheel of Time inspired and themed merchandise is, of course, newcreationsbygen.com. So whenever you go to newcreationsbygen.com, whether you're looking for just Wheel of Time inspired stuff or not, you can find all kinds of really cool merchandise and goodie opportunities, all the way from gifts for your family, friends, significant others, whoever have you, newborns, children, toddlers, women, men, adults, anybody that wants anything, you can find something for them for sure on New Creations by Jen. Now, most of you listening are going to be looking for Wheel of Time stuff. And the easiest way to find it is to go
to the catalog section on New Creations by Jen, where you can see the groups of stuff for us at Black Tower Podcasts, Malkier Talks, Talk Around Riyadh, Will Reads, The Will Weaves, and Weekly Will News. So you can find all of this stuff, and you can browse and look at all the different kinds of things that each content creator that is a part of New Creations by Jen's has taken and asked Jen and Rob to put up on the site. Obviously, we're going to use ours as an example so that you can go in and look at Black Tower Podcast stuff, because we are the Black Tower Podcast. So if you go on, you can get our Two Rivers Sniper shot glass as well as Two Rivers Sniper shirt. It's available on a red shirt. So you can go on and you can get our Frosty mug, which is one of the Frosty mug collectibles. Each Wheel of Time content creator that is on New Creations by Jen has a Frosty mug that you can go in and get for yourself. So after you get ours, make sure you get the others and get the entire set and join the Frosty Mug Society. Of course, there's more than just Frosty mugs and little shot glasses, and there's plenty of different kinds of shirts with different designs on them from all of the different content creators. Of course, you can find ours where you can get our logo in black and white on a shirt. I have one myself. It's fantastic and I love it. Jen and Rob do an amazing job of working with not only their customers, but the content creators that they help support with this amazing and very good quality merchandise. So if you have not headed over to New Creations by Jen and gotten yourself something dope, make sure you go and do that. Again, it's newcreationsbyjen.com.
Which is like incredibly hard to do.
Yes.
Which is exactly. Why like getting smoked was such a thing for the military for so long. And now it's not quite as much.
Yeah.
Yep.
I don't know. Anyway. I mean, so final thoughts, Daniel. I wanted to echo kind of what you were saying. I really love the idea of the Fourth Age channelers doing their foreign exchange program.
Welcome to the College of Winterhold.
I think it will be, I think it's one of Egwene's like best ideas. And to be honest, I really hope Cad Swain like held it up and continued to do it. I can't see the benefits.
Why not?
Exactly. I like the benefit,
which fuck that shit.
Which yeah.
Every good university has a foreign exchange program.
I like the idea that women who can channel are also visiting the Black Tower. Because working with Sidene, not even necessarily to find a warder, but to work with Sidene, because they're going to be rogue channelers,
mm-hmm.
Knowing how to do that, I think is such an important thing in their
career. Would not task Loghain playing the role of matchmaker.
The Windfinders.
Matchmaker.
Make me a match.
We see in the story that the Sea Folk are particularly strong-willed and very strong-minded. And so for them to add their spice to the White Tower and to the Wise Ones and literally to receive that same, you know, chutzpah from the White Tower
same
and
what?
The Wise Ones. Chutzpah.
I'm not familiar with that word. Can you translate that into at least redneck?
Gumption.
Okay.
Gumption. That what for.
Yeah.
That there what for. Gotcha. Now.
I think the Sea Folk present
freedom fries
an incredibly rich and very valuable culture to the stories, and I really like it. So that's my final thoughts. That's me.
I like it, Andrew. What do you think?
I got a yawn. One second. Holy shit!
Apparently,
it's Daniel's skill as a waiter. Yawn. Instead of saying, how's the food, right as soon as you put food in your mouth, Daniel also knows when you're about to yawn.
Yeah.
Can I just say, that is one of the joys of being a waiter, of just like coming over to a table as they take a bite. Like, you watched them do it. You knew it was happening. You came over as they were
doing
it.
Of course you knew.
So what you get for asking for your third fork, you bastard.
Ask for paper napkins. Do it. Watch what happens.
I think the Sea Folk, they're pretty cool.
Did you empathetically yawn for yourself?
He did.
Maybe. Holy shit.
He needs to go to bed.
Saw himself in.
I mean, I have only been up since like 3 a.m. So
that guy's yawned.
But no, I think the Alpha Omni are like they're pretty cool. I like how they're in general like more of like a chill kind of culture. We get to experience bits and pieces of kind of throughout the series. Then there's just enough intricacies with the sea folk to make them pretty interesting, but not so much where it's like overbearingly kind of like, you know, oh, you just threw too much into this group to explain things. So I don't know, it's pretty cool. And there's, you know, more to them than you might like read initially in the series, because like I am not sure how much whenever I first read, I'm not sure how much I really like remember noticing the Amayar. Like I think I vaguely remember like seeing it's like, oh, someone else makes the porcelain, and that I think that's all yeah. I recalled generically, but then reading it again and being like, the shit went from like
yeah
zero to Charles Manson really fucking quick.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's I'm gonna end my thought there with a Charles Manson reference.
It went from zero to Jim Jones.
Less Charles Manson, more Georgetown.
Yeah.
Okay.
Or Jonestown.
Jonestown, yeah. The...
Jonestown.
Yes. Yeah.
No, that's what I meant. Right. I don't I don't even know who Charles Manson is. It's a name that popped in my brain.
He's
Marilyn Manson's cousin.
No,
Helter Skelter.
Yeah, Daniel. Before this gets too deep into serial killer lore,
well, who's the religious cult?
Wrap us up. Yes.
In California.
Yeah. I just want to reiterate sort of what both of you said. It's a great. I really like the knowledge base of Robert Jordan, that he took his military service and put it into a culture that he told you what you needed to know. He left it vague because he doesn't need to inundate you with another culture. We already have the Aiel and the Crystal Pillars. We already have the Andorans and their rich history. We have so many different things, and if you inundate readers with too many aspects of too many cultures, you just get that shock. You just get that I don't care anymore. And I think that Robert Jordan and then later Brandon Sanderson did a really good job of telling us everything that we needed to know about the Alpha on the Air, while also leaving them enough of a mystery and an interesting culture where we wanted more, but we were also happy with what we got.
Yes.
If that makes sense.
Always leave them wanting more.
Right? And so again, I love the idea of the Fourth Age, of channelers in general, which includes the Atha and the Air, as well as, again, they have this vast sort of region that they control, which is the water that we that is
I don't know why.
You know, this sort of, you don't really think that Randland is very much water, but it is. If you look at the map of Randland, there's a lot out there, and so I really appreciate and enjoy the amount that they gave us while also leaving a lot alone.
Yeah.
Without necessarily feeling like they had to tell us more. And again, for better or for worse, or for, you know, our benefit or others, that means that the amount of speculation, the amount of theorizing, the amount of fanfic, the amount of whatever that you can do about the Atha on the Air is limitless in some ways. And I always appreciate the non-50 Shades of Grey fanfic kind of stuff that is, oh, you gave us stuff that I want to know more about? Great, let me think critically about it and write what I want. And so again, I just love the amount that we got and the amount that was left of history.
Perfect.
Well said.
at the end of the podcast, you guys know what to do. You're going to go to blackcardpod.com. That's going to happen. You're going to click all of our social medias. You're going to subscribe to them because you never want to miss out. You are going to go to thegreatblight.com and you're going to look at all the other fabulous and amazingly talented content creators that are there.
And you're going to follow awesome. All of them except for Malkier Talks, because fuck that guy.
Yeah. Wait,
I'm sorry.
Wait,
Jesus what? Christ.
I'm just kidding. Malkier Talks, you're great. I love you.
He's awesome.
You're going to subscribe to Malkier Talks especially.
Because especially. And then you're going to go to thecrystalbarista.com or facebook.com/rockpick. You're going to check out the Crystal Barista. You're going to check out the Crystal Festival, which is October 8th and 9th. And I will say this, there's already 1,000 people who have RSVP'd on Facebook. It's going to be huge. Damn. So don't miss it out. It's going to be a lot of fun.
It's going to be huge.
Some huge freaking rock festival.
But it is amazing. We
are going to be Red Rod Terrell. You can put it up your
listen.
Up your
we're going to be selling pieces of Egwene, and it's only going to be the best pieces of Egwene. All right, only the best.
Only the best pieces of Egwene.
If you look closely into the crystal,
pieces of Egwene.
If you look closely into the crystal, you can still see the reflections of Dragonmount. It's magnificent.
It. It's beautiful.
You're going to put the red rod. Red Rod Tarangreal in your gina.
All right, guys. Well, as we all know here at the Black Tower Podcast, not everything that is touched by the shadow is lost. And that is totally true for thegreatblight.com. Now, Nablus and his team have done an amazing job of going ahead and putting this together, and it is possibly the greatest resource for those of us here in the Wheel of Time community. First off, you have this awesome homepage with posts from a bunch of your favorites. Go and find, you can go and check out new things that you've never seen before, keep up to date on content creators that you already follow, and just go ahead and dip as many of your toes or your entire foot as you want into all of the different things that are going on. Now, also here, there is probably the best list of content creators. There's YouTubers, podcasters, artists, musicians, just about everything you could want. And if you don't see your favorite content creator there, that's fine. There is an application included in the site to go ahead and make sure that your favorite content creator is part of it. Just encourage them to fill out the application and Nablus will be in touch. Now, after you've gone ahead and checked that out, you're going to want to pop over to the ever-expanding library here at the Great Blight, because it is something particularly special. Now, I don't know how many times I've gone ahead and joined a fandom only to find out halfway through my first read, looking up a character, that they die in the second to last book, which sucks. It always is very disappointing when you can't look up anything interesting about what you've read for fear of things that you haven't read yet. But they've fixed the problem over at thegreatblight.com. It is a spoiler-free wiki. That's right. That means that if you've only read up to Path of Daggers and you really want to find out what in the world you missed about Egwene because there's something you just don't understand, or if you want to get more information about Rand because you think he's super cool, you don't need to read past Path of Daggers, and it's not going to ruin you on A Memory of Light before you've gotten there. You'll know exactly where to stop. You'll know exactly where you are. And once you're done with that, make sure that you go ahead and help the site out, the content creators out, everything like that, with the beta nature of it. Up here at the top, you're going to see a problem, have a suggestion button. That is specifically for if you have any issues with the site or if you have any feedback. It's only something that we can make better with feedback and with help from the community. So come on down, check it out. Grab a couple of our videos or grab a couple of our podcasts, and we'd love to see you there.
Anyway, this is the Black Tower. This has been the Black Tower. We hope that we've left you just a little bit more insane than you were when you first joined us. So thanks for tuning in to this week's dose of taint and the delicious, oily, slick madness slithering into your ears. That is a gross sound.
Good.
Lost.
I made the mistake of doing it at work once. Like, one of the guys I used to work with, like, he legit, like, he had, like, no teeth. Like, he had something happen. Yeah. Like, and he would do that, and it was just so much more, like, wet but weak and collapsing hose suction sound.
Thank you. From all of us here at the Black Tower, I have been your Sorvan Mihail, Josh.
And I have been your Bajan Mihail, and I hope you're interesting. The last... You're interesting? What the fuck? You're enjoying the last three episodes of the Black Tower podcast for this season.
Season two.
For season two.
Pause dramatic.
Pause for dramatic, dramatic panic.
Dramatic. Pause for dramatic effect. And indeed, there is one thing that Josh missed. He didn't actually miss it necessarily, but that is, please go over to New Creations by Jen.
Oh,
she's
yeah.
Lovely. She's awesome. She does a number of our merch pieces. Definitely get in on the Frosty Mug Society because it's fantastic. And let's be honest, everyone could use more great cups. And they are great. And they are cups. And they are branded. So get them. Be awesome.
You also need a flicker shirt.
True. And a Two River Sniper. So, like, again, there's a number of things,
you need not it.
Just the All Frosty Mug Society. But Frosty Mug Society, very much on there. But from all of us here at the Black Tower Podcast, thank you again so much for listening, whether you are listening literally right now to when I'm first seeing this in the Patreon, because we love you and you're awesome, or whether you're listening to this recorded on our Podbean or our YouTube or whatever. We love you. You guys are fantastic, and we could not do this without you. We hope that you are having a wonderful morning. I have been your Amon Khan Mihail, Daniel, and in case we don't see you again, good afternoon, good evening, and good night.
Always running the show.
This fight,
yeah. In the tower, you can bring your pain. In the tower, you can feel the strain. You've been having so much trouble just fitting.